The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your RSM Classic Tournament Recap. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Hey, Greg.
Well, it wasn't very interesting today. I mean, Friday night we talked about the Robert Streb runaway, and it happened. So, it was nice to watch, but a great performance by him.
You gave this victory to Robert Streb on Friday night, and it was a piece of cake the whole way. He had it in the bag.
You're right. There was nothing to worry about. Stress-free. So it was nice.
I love it. Mark Immelman is here. Mark, happy Sunday.
Thanks, boys. How are you guys doing? It's good to be back.
Good to have you back. Kyle Porter also here. Looks like you're getting more and more comfortable, KP, in the new digs. Things are happening behind you.
Yeah, I think by the 2021 Masters, we'll be all set up. So we're taking it one day at a time, you know, one shot at a time. So we're making it.
2021 Masters, it looks like you've been in the patrons merchandising shop there by your headgear, bro.
For sure. I have.
Ready for the winter.
Yes.
If you're watching us on YouTube, youtube.com/firstcutpodcast, KP rocking the Masters beanie with bowl on top. What's that called?
I don't know. Pom-pom?
Pom-pom. Pom-pom on top. Thank you, Greg. Robert Streb, your winner of the 2020 RSM Classic. He does it in pretty styling fashion in a playoff over Kevin Kisner. Greg, since we talked a lot about this Friday evening, let's start here with you. This is Streb's 165th PGA Tour start since he won this event in 2014, and he's now the first player to capture his first two tour victories at the same event since Daniel Berger.
Which is great. But this is what we were talking about on Friday night, right? When you get all that work done early in the early goings of a tournament and you shoot 65, 63, just go through winners on the PGA Tour and the scores that they shoot. And sometimes the order, we get kind of sucked into the order, but you have a 65, a 63 and two other rounds that are 68 or better. And that's a winning scorecard very often. So when you get that work done early, sometimes you can feel like you're hanging on. That's the challenge when everybody else is making their late runs. But he didn't really have to go crazy over the weekend, which was nice. And on a day like Sunday, where there's not a lot of wind, it was a much easier golf course. You look at the leaderboard, there's a number of great rounds going on. And he didn't have to do too much. It got really close at the end. The bogey on 13 didn't help, but when it really came down to it, he had that shot on 17. That shot was so good. And the putt was equally as good. So it was quite impressive.
Yeah. Par 3 17th. He hits his shot to 11 feet, converts the putt, Mark. And I think it's interesting because Greg was mentioning, you know, he didn't have to do a lot on the weekend, which is good because he didn't really. He was like 5 under on the weekend, 19 under in total. But this is a stat that I thought was very interesting. He's the fifth consecutive player to convert a 36-hole lead or co-lead into victory at the RSM Classic, which is kind of surprising because we see 2 and 3 shot leads evaporate constantly on the PGA Tour.
Well, it was almost evaporated over the final few holes this afternoon for Streb, and he came through with a few clutch shots. You know, that 14th hole, I joked with you guys earlier this week when we had that text chain going on, that it's one of my favorites on tour because, look, Sea Island is fantastic. Those two golf courses, especially now the Plantation was redone, it's great. But Seaside is just awesome, and the conditions there are always they're always going to challenge every part of the game. And I love the golf course. And 14 is one you've got to get by. And it was a bit scrappy up to then. There was that two-sided miss he had going on. And he hits two quality shots there. And then, of course, that birdie on 17. And to that statistic you level, it's kind of what the PGA Tour represents. You know, it's a 72-hole deal. And really, you know, to use a cliche, over the final nine holes where the stuff starts really hitting the fan. But it was curious because as I was watching this and watching Streb, who hadn't been, he'd been a non-factor basically for since he won here last. That was back in my radio days that I used to cover this event. And it always seemed like there was a playoff every year. I mean, one year with Mackenzie Hughes, we had to stay overnight because we ran out of lights. Came back the following morning in the frigid cold for one hole, basically. But Streb, when he won back there in the playoff, it ended on 17. And he flushed an 8-iron to about 3 feet, right in over the top of the flag. And so when I watched him do that on 18 today, it was kind of strange how he finished off this event the same way in the two goes he's been in playoffs over here. So I think a lot of it is the golf course. You know, a lot of it is, you know, kind of the low ball he hits around, windy conditions over there. But you could see it meant something because he was kind of iffy over the final few holes, but showed his mettle to come through with a victory.
He certainly did. The shot he hit into 17, we talked about. He gave himself a great chance on 18 to win it outright. Then he gets into a playoff, KP. And I'll tell you what, you know, I had forgotten what Kevin Kisner's playoff record was, which we'll talk about in a second. It's kind of surprising for a guy who's so good in match play. And I'm thinking, oh, man, Streb's about to get chewed up and spit out here by Kevin Kisner, who's on a roll. He shoots a 63 on Sunday. They get through the first playoff hole, both of them making par, and then they both miss the fairway on the second playoff hole. And Streb goes first and hits. How would you describe this shot that he hits into the second playoff hole?
I mean, it reminded me of who was it that made the ace to win Shriners? Like
Jonathan Bird.
Was it Jonathan Bird?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it reminded me of because he made it. And it was, you know, I think when I think about winning like he did, it's, and I think Mark has talked about this, it's almost harder when you're trying to like, because somebody's going to go out shoot 8-under, 7-under. I mean, you know that's going to happen. And so you're almost saying to yourself, okay, well, it's very difficult to lead out in front like that. And so even maybe to get into a playoff might've been a relief for him of just like, okay, I can breathe. I know it's just me and one other guy. Like we can kind of get after it, but yeah, that second shot he hit in, to win it in the playoff was unbelievable.
You know, Kyle, that's an interesting point. Cause I had a chance to speak with Webb Simpson back in during the quarantine, and he had a very similar playoff record where it was really hard for him, and he lost at this event in a playoff. And he said the same thing to Tyler Duncan last year. He said, I felt like when I was getting into playoffs, I felt like I could breathe, and it was okay. I'm either first or second, no matter what happens. Like, it's okay. All the work is done. And when he got to before Waste Management, he was thinking about that, trying to figure out what to do. And he did some work and he figured out he needed to be more aggressive, a little more urgent. And when he did that, he went out and birdied the first playoff hole at the Waste Management. But I just want to, I was just looking at some of these playoff record of Kevin Kisner. And it's in 2015, RBC Heritage loses to a birdie from Jim Furyk. The Players Championship in 2015, we remember what Fowler did in that playoff and how he lost there. So that was a little bit tough. The Greenbrier, he and Robert Streb actually were both in a playoff, and they were both eliminated to a birdie on the first hole. It was at the Zurich Classic in 2017. He lost to a birdie on the fourth extra hole. And this year at the RSM, he loses to a birdie on the second playoff hole. So, that's tough, but it teaches you a lesson. You got to make birdies in playoffs.
Well, I wanted to add real fast to that. It was amazing to watch the whole thing unfold, you know, from a fan's sort of a point of view. For me, I was just on the couch, you know, flipping between football and golf. And when my team started going in the wrong direction, I flipped to the golf a bit more. And you watch people sort of struggling their way through it. And you could see Streb didn't have the thing, yet he was still trying to play aggressive. Didn't drive the ball awfully well, I thought. And then on 18, the first time, sort of whiffs one in the bunker and has nothing. And that up and down he had, I mean, that was incredible, because that pitch shot, I don't think TV did it justice. But then when he smashes one and he hits it in the sweet spot the next time around, hits it over the top of those bunkers and has a wedge in his hand. And then he could go ahead and play aggressive. And you kind of got the sense that from here, he was like, okay, I'm playing with house money right now. So I'm going to go ahead and attack even from the rough, because you can hit a jet over the back of the green so quickly. It's the wedge in there, nearly holes out. I mean, that would have been cool if he pulled that off.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that I was thinking about as Greg was talking, and this has little to do with the RSM because, you know, Webb was in it, but he didn't play well. But we've talked a lot about Webb specifically over the last few weeks about last week it was, okay, I gotta play Augusta more conservatively. And this week it's, hey, I got to play a playoff more aggressively, maybe more liberally. And I think that idea just kind of, and Mark again has talked about this, speaks to how long it takes to figure stuff out on the PGA Tour. And I don't know, that has really nothing to do with necessarily Robert Streb or Kevin Kisner or anybody, but I just think that learning curve, I think whenever we're talking about golf, we think it's just who has the most talent. And a lot of times it is, most of the time it is, but that learning curve that can be worth a shot a week, two shots a week, three shots a week. I think that's a real thing. And maybe why you're seeing guys like DJ and Webb and some of these guys in their mid 30s have so much late career success right now.
They're banking up all that knowledge, and it's coming certainly in handy. Gentlemen, in case you missed it last week, we're giving away a 55-inch smart TV. None of you are eligible, but everyone else is. The contest is completely free to enter. To win, go to cbssports.com/firstcutgiveaway. That link is in the description of the episode if you're watching on YouTube, as well as in the podcast description on all podcasting platforms. And the contest ends November 23rd. So if you're listening to this on the day that Robert Streb won, it ends tomorrow. If you're listening to it yesterday, tomorrow, it ends today. Gentlemen, Kevin Kisner, and Greg, I want to start with you on this because he is going to finish runner-up to Robert Streb. And we've kind of alluded to this a little bit. 0-5 in PGA Tour playoffs and eliminated with birdie all five times, which doesn't really jive with Kevin Kisner, right? I mean, he's been so successful at the match play. A playoff situation turns into match play to be 0-5. I mean, it just, this is a real big disconnect for me.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but it's still, I guess it turns into match play in some sense, but a match play tournament, a match play round of 18 holes and a single hole in match play are often very different. You know, in a match play event, in a match play tournament, there's ebbs and flows and you can kind of get a feel for your opponent and what they're doing. There's much more strategy involved over a long haul. When you get to just one hole, it often feels like it's one hole. Maybe it's two. It's just kind of it's like a Monday qualifier, right? You just got to go out there, guns ablazing, and go at every flag. It's a sudden death playoff for a reason. So, well, I understand what you're saying, but it's really difficult to go and make a birdie on the very first hole under that kind of pressure. So there may be something with his strategy. Maybe it's a mindset like we talked about earlier for him where he can figure out a way to get this done. But boy, he is fun to watch when he gets under the gun, when he gets into contention, and when he feels like he has a chance to win. He's got that look in his eye they were talking about on the broadcast. He's just so intense. So I love watching him play. I expect his career, he's got three PGA Tour wins and the 0-5 record in the playoff. I expect him to add at least a couple more before his career is over.
I think what's even weirder is just that a top 50, he's pretty consistently a top 50 guy, top 60, top 40, whatever bucket you want to put him in. Statistically, it's weird to go 0-5, right? Like one of those, and I don't have all the guys that he lost to in front of. I mean, he's a better player than Robert Streb, and he's probably been better than at least some of the other guys that he's been in a playoff with. So I think it's almost statistically weirder that he's 0-5 in playoffs than it is weird that somebody that we think of as a match play guy would have not won kind of a in a one-on-one setting.
Yeah, even if they're all coin flips, like you would think that you can't lose five coin flips in a row at some point, but Kevin Kisner has. Mark, to Kisner's credit, I mean, he closed on Sunday with a bogey-free 63 to even get himself into this playoff. We know that Sea Island is a place he's had a ton of success. He's won here. He's been in contention a whole bunch. So this is just more of Kevin Kisner, you know, doing the same at a place that he loves, even if it doesn't end up maybe the way that he would have liked.
Yeah, it is. And just to build on the playoff observations real fast, I think Greg made a very smart observation with the match play tournament sort of thing, because they play there out in the Austin Country Club and that sort of golf course. You'll see situations where guys stack birdies upon each other, but it's largely with those undulating greens where he won the match play. It's a place where if you just stack pars on top of someone, you're likely to come out there unbeaten. And then you just got to pick off birdies on the birdie-able holes. And that's what Kisner does, you know. All of my experiences with him, he's a grinding, sort of a gritty competitor. And everyone talks about the mindset, but he's the kind of guy who's never going to let you go. And if he gets to a golf course where he's comfortable, he clearly is comfortable around here because he likes to move it from right to left, and most of the holes turn from the right to left there. And then when they are going in the opposite direction, the wind is out of the left, so he can hold his draw into that. So it's a really happy hunting ground for him. And I still don't know why on earth I didn't pick him in the one and done league, because I was dumb. But anyhow, the thing about Kisner around Sea Island is, ever since he first saw it back in the SEC championship days playing for Georgia, he has been just a banshee around this place. And so when you come back to a golf course where you can read the greens comfortably, the golf course fits your eye off the tee, which is one of the keys to Seaside, because wherever you look, there's marshland and crosswinds. But if you've got really good sight lines and you feel confident to put the ball in play off the tee, a number of the greens allow you then to play offense to some of them. So it's a question for a guy who wasn't really playing that great coming in here. It's just comfortability. And he's pretty accurate. So if he's feeling comfortable, if he gets a chance to show off his short game, which he does around here too, around these greens that are perched up and they let you bump and runs and lob shots and stuff like that, it's playing into his palette of weapons. So I'm certain, and I won't make this mistake again next year. If Kisner's healthy, Kisner at Sea Island is a thing.
I think you've now got like five or six tournaments already pre-aligned. If Kisner at Sea Island, Rory at East Lake, Xander somewhere.
Webb at Wyndham.
Webb at Wyndham. Yeah, okay. We know Mark's schedule. Real quick on this, Greg, because we'll put a bow on a conversation we had on Friday. Camilo Villegas, he was obviously, you know, the rooting favorite of so many. This week, he's going to finish T6. His Saturday round of 70 was the one that got away from him a little bit in an event where scoring is so low. But we hope that obviously he can continue this momentum from week to week and see how long you can keep it going.
Absolutely. So it was a strong finish for him. He'll be able to get into Mayakoba now, so he'll have another opportunity to play at another golf course that should fit him well. It's just he's really close. I mean, he really could have won this tournament. The bogey at 13 was unfortunate. He, I believe it was 14, narrowly missed a birdie putt, and then he had a pretty good look for eagle on 15. That he missed, and he was forced to walk away with just a birdie there. So he had a couple opportunities in that one to get really close to the lead and really challenge. All in all, it was a good week. You could look to the second nine on Sunday as where the tournament kind of got away, but it was really more likely the second nine on Saturday, as you mentioned, Rick, where he added a couple under par. He shoots two under on that second nine, and this is a different day entering today. He shoots 37. On the second nine with two bogeys and ends up with a 70.
You know, just to look at the physical element of it all, and I'm going to use the term statistically, believe it or not, you look at how the game is stacking together for him and his approach play. I was so impressed watching some of the shots he hit into those greens. He was moving the flight. He was pretty good distance control wise. And he looked like the Camilo Villegas of old to me, who had won multiple events on the PGA Tour. He was pretty good off the tee, but he was a really stout iron player and he could really scramble around the greens. And that stuff was working. If there's anything that to me was letting him down, I don't think he putted as well on some really pure greens. But the spiritual part of it, you know, sort of how I look at golf, you know, given what happened with Mir and just what a horrific turn of events, you know, golf is a game of perspective. And it's easy for a pro golfer, any golfer for that matter, but certainly pro that you can lose the perspective of the thing. And now with him having had Mears passing in the rearview mirror, it seems to me like every round he plays, he's into that thing with a different kind of a perspective, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. You know, it's like he is almost thankful that he's competing and playing good golf. And I heard of an anecdote from a colleague of mine. We're in the driving range earlier last week, this week. He saw a rainbow and he's like, Mia's watching, or Mia's smiling, something to that sort of an effect. So right now he's got golf in its place. And it's something Rory McIlroy has talked about. So I feel like the physical traits are there. And now that with some good play, he'll get a few starts and such. And with the mindset he's got going on, it's freewheeling. And so I expect a guy who is a confident sort of a player may start to build on this kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're going to keep a close eye on him moving forward, and we're going to look ahead to the golf that we have on tap the next couple of weeks, and we will go through our matchups and one and done. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And we're back. Turkey break time. So the PGA Tour taking a week off for Thanksgiving, but golf is not. We will get the match part three. That's Phil Mickelson, Charles Barkley versus Steph Curry and Peyton Manning. And then the following week will be the last event of the calendar year. It'll be Mayakoba. That field is shaping up to be pretty strong as of right now. Some of these guys might opt out at some point, but Abe Anser in the field, Ricky Fowler, Tony Finau, Dustin Johnson still listed in the field, Brooks Koepka still listed in the field. We'll keep a close eye on them, KP. But looking towards this, give me an idea of your thoughts on the world of golf for the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think that I think Peyton and Steph are going to kill Phil and Barkley. I
mean, okay,
Peyton and Phil are like probably the same handicap right now. Right?
Jesus, no. Wow. So I think you're doing a thing right now, but I actually thought they were like, when this first came out, I was like, yeah, Steph and Peyton are gonna kill him. I'm actually coming around that I think the others, I think I want Charles and Phil.
It does feel a little like suckerish, like it seems so obvious. But yeah, no, that'll be fun. You know, Mayakoba is interesting. I hope DJ plays, that'd be fun. Ricky, I think, is interesting. He's not, I don't think he's qualified for the Masters next year.
Ooh. Wow.
Because I don't know how he would have.
He's inside the top 50, isn't he?
No, I don't think.
Top 50 in the world?
I can tell you in a second.
It's pretty close if he is.
When last I checked, I thought he was like 44 or something like that.
He's 48.
Yeah, there we are. 48.
So if he could fall out by the end of the year, I guess is sort of what I'm getting at.
Kyle, is that when the cutoff is end of the year?
It's normally December 31, and then there's another one
two, yeah.
a week before. Right. 2 weeks before.
Right.
So that's pretty intriguing because we think of Fowler as kind of a mainstay at majors, obviously. But he's not been playing well. And, you know, thank God Spieth won a Masters. he wouldn't be qualified either.
Well, okay, to that, is he in the U.S. Open and such, Jordan?
Yeah, he won. I mean, you get 10 years. After.
Okay, well, okay, how about the Open then?
I mean, you get lifetime after you win that.
Well, Tree's won the Open.
He's won. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
He's a wanamaker away from a career Grand Slam.
I think you get into the PGA for like 5 years after winning the Open. So he's got a few more years. All that to say, like, Mikova, if the field holds, should be a lot of fun.
If this field holds, Greg, is DJ just going to be like 5-1 at Mayakoba after what he's done the last couple of weeks or months?
Yeah, I mean, and he should be. Why would you – you can't take anything away from – the guy's played nothing but perfect golf for a while. And with what he said after winning the Masters, it leads you to believe that he's in a different place right now and he's really motivated to finish strong. I got no sense that Dustin Johnson has like accomplished a goal and – is going to go and kick it back and relax for the remainder of his career. I think he's really trying to put 10 more really hard years together and accomplish some things. So I think it'll be important to him. I think his form shows, of course, that he should be the favorite. And I think he will be.
Have y'all seen his strokes gain number for the last 3 months?
I think you dropped it on a pod the other day.
4.2.
Oh, that's even better than I thought it was.
And he's playing only the best events.
Right. Yeah. I saw he was 92 under par in his last seven events.
Somebody brought this up on Twitter and it sounds sacrilegious, but I think there's actually something in there that's truth or valid to it. But he was, Dylan Deshaies, who works for golf.com. He was talking about how he's like, is this the best golf that anybody is this better golf than Tiger even played in 2000? And I think that, like, at the outset you're like, that's stupid, like that's a dumb thing, but then you start thinking about it and you're like, I don't know, golf's better now, and DJ, you'd have to do it for I don't think he's done it for long enough to like really compare the Tiger thing, but I do think that, like, I mean, I almost feel like we're underrating how good he's been over the last 3 or 4 months.
I'll say it's the best other than that golf that Tiger played. But Tiger won 7 events in a row.
And golf's better now. I think Vijay, Ernie, Phil, Retief, all of them. There was the big 6 at that stage. I think they'll have something to say about that hot take of yours from your new shed.
No, but there's no industry in human civilization that's gotten less competitive when more money it gets poured into it. So it would be an outlier industry, like, historically. I hear what you're saying, and I think those guys are – I mean, we were talking about the Masters. Ernie Els, historically underrated, I think. I think he's one of the best of all time, but – if you look top to bottom, and this is kind of where you compare the strokes game thing, like, it's harder to gain strokes now than it was in 2000 because top to bottom golf is deeper and better than it was in 2000. It was better in 2000 than it was in 1990. It's just, I don't think there's like a great argument against that.
Oh yeah. Okay. I sort of, yeah, that I still just find it sort of amusing when I just want to see the guy's trophy, his mantelpiece right now. And not necessarily look at the strokes gain number he's gaining every round of golf. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. And if you look at what he's got going on the trophy cabinet, it's been ridiculous over the last few months.
I was watching that Tiger chasing history thing the other night, and it stood out to me when, and I think it was Jim Nantz on the call, Tiger had gone 8 events in a row without winning. And he wins, and the quote that Jim Nantz said afterwards is, "The drought is over." Like, could you imagine an 8 tournament stretch being described as a drought for any person on the planet? Like, that's insane to me to think about.
I think that, I don't know, DJ's, I don't know. I think
Kyle, I'm going to stop you from yourself here just for a minute because I love you. Okay. You are the best one for just dropping this random Tiger nugget before a major championship going, hey, just to remind you, the Tiger went 6,723 days or whatever, just something crazy like that. And everyone else put together hasn't even achieved that sort of deal. And now you are sort of arguing perhaps, but potentially DJ's playing better golf than Tiger Woods did when he's in his prime.
Yeah. I think that if you take the context of it, I think what Tiger did is both underrated and overrated. I think it's overrated because it wasn't against the type of competition that you're seeing now, but I think it's underrated because he changed the entire industry, right? Like he shifted the entire industry, like by standard deviations so that it's way better now, which is an unbelievable thing to do. Like nobody does that. So I don't know. I think it's interesting because if you contextualize what DJ is doing in this era, I think you could make an argument that he's playing as good a golf as Tiger ever did.
Kyle, Tiger did what he did across like three. I mean, it's the Tiger era, but it's almost like three different eras. I mean, he won a major in 97. He won as many as he did in the 2000s. He won a major in 2019. So it's like Tiger didn't do this in one era against one group of players. There was a host of players that he did. The game changed while he was playing it, and he continued to dominate. I mean, years that he has that are dominant, this DJ run is great, but it's almost like a normal stretch of Tiger. Tiger has a stretch like this in like 4 years. There are 4 years you could find with a 7-event streak like this for Tiger Woods. It happens all the time.
Help me remember what DJ's won. He won Northern. He won in Boston. He won Northern Trust, correct?
Yeah.
And then he. Well, you guys say he didn't win the tour championship.
officially, he did. He won. He won the Travelers.
Uh-huh. I guess
he just won the Masters. So four since the Travelers.
I know of one dude called Tiger Woods that won four majors like on the spin. Remember that lot? Okay, the Tiger Slam. Okay, just I'll stop with that.
So and I knew you guys would argue against me, and that's fine because I think it's an interesting argument. I think the part where you get lost is in the argument is what Greg just said of like, show me the 2000 to 2008 run, which is it's a joke. And so you almost have to argue like a 3-month stretch or a 6-month stretch. You can't take like cross sections of years and put them up against Tiger because nobody has done that. I'm arguing more of like a shorter time period. And I think if you look at the last 3 months of DJ gaining over 4 strokes on the best collection of golfers top to bottom in the history of the sport, it's a pretty legitimate thing.
Any single one of those guys on the tour, you say to them, hey, I'm going to give you 4 tournament wins in the space of 5 months, or you can gain 4 strokes on the field and take that as your accomplishment. Which one are you going to go with?
Well, we're not tour players, though. We're dissecting this stuff statistically and by wins and by all those different things. So, yeah.
They do go hand in hand to some degree as well.
Some degree.
But, I mean, you gain that many strokes and you end up with a lot of trophies, which DJ has done both.
I'm going to put a pin in this here. Sounds like great off-season conversation we can have. And we'll go quick on the odds and ends because we got smoked this week. It was an absolute bloodbath out there. Kyle, with a 2-2-1 record, you get to put on the matchup belt. Congrats.
That's embarrassing. I don't even deserve it.
I mean, yeah, so many guys missed the cuts. So many
wins a win. You were competing against a weak field. I mean, this was like Tiger Woods. It feels like strong when he was winning.
This is like the NFC East right here this week.
It's like Tiger winning the 2001 PGA. It's like
our one and done picks were not much better. Sungjae Im missed the cut. Mark zero.
What was I thinking?
I think you actually typed in, I'm going to regret this. ... Sungjae Im.
I was vacillating between Harris, Kisner, and then I was sort of thinking along, okay, who's the other Sea Island boys? Maybe I could spin someone. No, I'll go with Sungjae. He's playing well. And I did this. I'm like, this is a bad idea.
Greg and producer Jacob took Russell Henley for 39,553, which is peanuts in our one and done game. And then
Kyle
and myself had Webb Simpson, 28,710. That's not going to get it done. The consolation for everyone is basically the same standings we had before the week. We're in the same exact spot.
Hey, Webb's going to make more than that at the Wyndham Championship. I can promise you.
I would load up a lot of money on that he would for sure. Gentlemen.
I thought Mark had to sit out because he kept picking the same guy for one and done.
Technically, he did. He took a zero.
Mark had that was last Sungjae year for $0. I think that's punishment.
Yeah. I put myself in the penalty box last year because I picked Woodland twice by mistake.
Well, honestly, now that we have the spreadsheet, now that producer Jacob actually shares our picks with us, this is going to be a lot easier to track moving forward. I was just firing in text messages of who I thought I had left, and that was how I was dealing with it.
I think you picked Xander twice this season, Martin.
No, I didn't.
I think so.
I haven't picked anyone twice.
Jacob's spreadsheet says differently, but that's okay. We're gonna figure.
Well, how am I supposed to pick folks if I can?
I agree. I'm backing you on this. We were just throwing out whoever we thought we had left. I completely agree, but we're all on the same page now. We're all good now.
So where did I pick Xander twice? Help me now.
US Open and Zozo.
Why didn't someone tell me when I text these things? Jeez. It's conspiracy. You got whatever.
Hey, it's golf. You call your own penalties.
and you keep your own score.
Okay, right. I'm gonna ask you, I need a summary of who I've picked, please.
This is an incorrect scorecard that we have.
We have the link now, so we'll blast that out. Gentlemen, happy Turkey Day. Enjoy a safe holiday. We're going to be back on Monday. I don't know if it's Monday, but we're coming back next week for a match 3 preview, which should be a lot of fun. Probably on Tuesday is when that's going to drop. But until then, let me thank Greg Ducharme, who you can find at The Real GFD. Let me thank Mark Immelman, who you can find at Mark_Immelman. And let me thank Kyle Porter, who you can find at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.